Ave, and welcome to Emperors of Rome, a podcast about the rulers of the ancient Roman Empire. I'm your host, Matt Smith, and with me, as always, is Dr. Rhiannon Evans, a lecturer in Ancient Mediterranean Studies at La Trobe University. This is episode XLIX, Suetonius. Now, for those of you who haven't heard of Suetonius, who are you and what podcast have you been listening to? Suetonius is one of the fonts of all knowledge when it comes to the emperors of Rome. He's a biographer who lived during the era that we're currently talking about, and he wrote one of the most valuable texts that we have for studying Roman emperors, that is the 12 Caesars. So now that we're in between Trajan and Hadrian, we thought we'd take the time to discuss the life of one of ancient Rome's most important biographers. Here's Rhiannon Evans.
Suetonius was born around 70 CE. Like most authors, we don't know exactly when. And we don't know for certain exactly where. He might have been born in Rome, and the current scholarship tends towards him being born in North Africa.
Yeah, what's the current scholarship basing that on? Because I try to look for the source of that.
The main basis for thinking that he was born in North Africa is from an inscription that was found in the 1950s, or at least first published in the 1950s in modern Algeria. And this clearly says that he was an important person there. It gives his name. It's a fragmentary inscription, like a lot of the inscriptions we've got, but it's got his full name, Gaius Suetonius Tranquillus. And it says that he holds several important priesthoods, that he was, for example, the priest of Vulcan, which may have been a priesthood that he held at Rome, but that he was selected for this role by the deified Emperor Trajan.
Yeah.
So obviously the inscription comes after Trajan's been deified, but it refers to a role that he was given under Trajan, who died in 117, remember? And also it lists a couple of his roles as an important imperial secretary. And it says that a local aristocracy, basically, have put up this inscription. That's okay. What we can tell from the partiality of it. It's erected in a place called Hippo Regius, which is in Numidia, in the Roman province of Numidia in modern Algeria. So we don't really know why they would have put up an inscription to him there unless his family comes from there.
Yeah, so it's like it's like a Roman version of a blue plaque.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
An important person came from here.
Yes, yeah.
And it's something for us to be proud of.
Yeah.
That's the idea.
That's a blue plaque. So what do we know about his family, or the sort of family that he came from?
He doesn't come from a senatorial family, from the very top tier of Roman society, but from the next one down, from an equestrian family. But by this period, in the second half of the first century into the second century CE, the equestrians are becoming really important. They're holding the administration of empire together. They are the civil service, and they're kind of climbing the tree. So his father is an equestrian called Suetonius Laetus, who holds administrative roles that are connected to the military.
Mm.
So he's what we call the tribune of the 13th Legion, which is in northern Italy. His father was apparently there when Otho died. Remember, one of those civil war emperors from 69 CE. This kind of shows us that his family is kind of there at important events. They're important political and military figures, or at least his father is.
So he starts having the normal progression for somebody, I suppose, who is a lifelong administrator role. And we get glimpses of him from other people's writings, don't we?
We do, and primarily at this point, early in his career, from the younger Pliny. And remember, we've got lots of letters written by Pliny, 10 books of letters, mostly him to his friends. And Suetonius starts to be mentioned in those letters around 97 CE. So presumably when Suetonius was maybe in his mid-20s, Pliny starts to sort of mark him out as somebody who's worth helping.
Yeah.
So he kind of becomes his patron or mentor. And he says, you know, he's a scholar, he writes very well. He tries to push his career along. So it's pretty clear at this point Suetonius is starting to get some experience as a lawyer as well. So he's kind of got that career that you can get if you're good at writing and speaking. For example, through Pliny's patronage, he gets a military tribunate like his father had, which would have been in Britain in around 102, but he actually didn't take it up, so he declines that post. So he clearly feels confident about his future that he can turn it down and has other options. And Pliny doesn't seem to have been annoyed by this, as you might be if you'd written the letters of recommendation and then someone says, no, I don't want that. We don't know why Suetonius declined it. There could be all kinds of reasons. But it's quite likely, most scholars think, that around 110 CE, Suetonius traveled to Bithynia with Pliny and was part of his retinue. And through Pliny, he seems to have got some, not quite honours, but the right of what we call, I know this sounds very strange, the law or the right of three children, which is called the Justrium Liberorum, which basically means, it must mean that Suetonius didn't have three children. Mm. We know very little about his private life. But if you had three children, then you got certain tax breaks and rights. And typically Roman, even though the law was you had to have three children, you could give that kind of concession to certain people who were considered to be the right sort.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's clear that Suetonius is considered to be the right sort and Pliny is helping him along with that.
So Pliny had to apply to Trajan for that
presumably
dispensation
so.
As well.
Yes, yeah. Exactly so. That's an honour of sorts.
A three-child encouragement kind of.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. This is something that's actually been in place since the time of Augustus because something that was seen as responsible for moral decline, as they saw it, was that the aristocracy in particular weren't having enough children.
So one for mum, one for dad, one for Rome.
Yes. And if you are a freedman, more particularly a freed woman, then four. You need to have four to get that right. It's harder for ex-slaves.
Now, probably the high point in his career and the time when he got access to all the good records when he could write the 12 Caesars was when he was working for Hadrian, isn't it?
Yeah, so after Trajan dies in 117 and Hadrian becomes emperor, Suetonius starts to, we don't know exactly at what point, maybe around 120, starts to hold important positions in the imperial administration. And this is particularly in terms of secretarial roles, working for Hadrian basically in his library, in the kind of scholarly part of his administration. So he has three roles and they're kind of secretaryships, ar studiis, literally around learning, presumably doing research for him, literary and historical research, perhaps. Ar bibliothecis, which means he looked after the libraries, perhaps even after the libraries that were built in Trajan's Forum, who knows. And ab epistulis, which I think might be the most important one because that's letters, that's imperial correspondence. And that means he gets to see what comes and goes and also has access to old correspondence. And obviously, all of this means he has really good access to research materials so that he can write, well, all of the things he writes, but particularly what we still have, which is the 12 Caesars. And it makes us think that what he has may well be reliable. Some people think that Suetonius is very sensationalist, but he had access to the written word on a lot of these emperors.
Yeah.
So this is very, very important, and it tells us something about how research might have been done and how somebody like Suetonius might have been in an ideal position to do it. The inscription is very fragmentary, but the parts of the words that give us those three roles, the ar studiis, ar bibliothecis, etc., are more complete than other parts of it. So like a lot of inscriptions, somebody who's very experienced at inscriptions reading them at epigraphy has gone along and filled in certain things that are likely to be there. There are still dot, dot, dots, bits that are missing where we just don't know and we can't make a good inference. But there are other parts, like not all of Suetonius's name there. There's Tranquillus. That is probably Tranquillus.
Yeah.
It's not that big a leap. But the parts of the words that list studiis and those roles are almost complete.
Three very important fragments then.
Yes. So he did this for the Emperor Hadrian. That part of Hadrian's name is there, which is wonderful.
He also stopped working for Hadrian at rather suspicious times, didn't he?
He did. He was sacked, it's fairly clear, and then we don't know of him having any official roles after that. And it may have been connected to the tour that Hadrian took, his trip to Britain, after which he apparently got rid of several officials, including his praetorian prefect, Clarus. At around the same time, Suetonius was dismissed from Hadrian's service, so it may have been for the same reason. And
spell out the reason.
The Historia Augusta says it is because of behaving indiscreetly with Sabina, the empress. having affairs, trying to have affairs, just, I don't know, being peeping Toms. We don't know exactly what that means.
Flirting a bit too much, but that's in the case of the head of the Praetorian Guards, Clara.
Yeah, we have no idea whether Suetonius was actually in Britain. But what this means is that people have tried to read the 12 Caesars and find at which point in those biographies of the 12 men Suetonius might have suddenly lost access to the records. Some people have theorized that because the biographies that come after the Julio-Claudians, after Nero, are shorter, well, the Civil War emperors, they didn't last very long, that's fine, but the Flavians, their biographies are shorter, so that looks a bit suspicious to some people. Some have theorized that when we stop getting quite as much quotation, because he can't quote directly.
From the emperors themselves.
Yeah. Which could be around the life of Claudius, that's when it happened. But all of this is kind of detective work based on knowing that he didn't have the job at some point.
Yeah.
Where might that be in looking at this text? And of course, we don't know exactly how Suetonius worked. He may have been collecting information for all 12 of them and then written some of them up and still had it to go back to. You know, he may have actually gone through and said, today I'm going to work on Julius Caesar and written that one up and then start on Augustus and do it all in absolute chronological order.
It's interesting, though, that Suetonius also dedicates the 12 Caesars to
Clarus.
To Clarus,
to the Praetorian
prefect who lost his job for being indiscreet with the Empress. Now, unless you're really good friends with that guy, it's interesting that you dedicate your book to somebody who's annoyed Hadrian.
It may well link them together in a way that suggests that they lost their jobs for the same reason.
Scandalous. So after that, for all intents and purposes, he vanishes from public record a bit, don't we? We know that he lived an old age.
I guess in ancient terms, yes. He probably lived into his 60s.
Yeah.
We don't hear about him holding any other public roles, but he may well have gone into serious writing at this point because his output was quite large. It's just that we don't have very much of it.
Okay, let's talk about that then. We've got works. Now, I've got, just let me find my Robert Graves copy of Suetonius here. Robert Graves starts off his translation of the 12 Caesars with a big list of titles that we've lost that he did write. Should I read them?
Yeah, go ahead.
The 12 Caesars, check. Royal Biographies, Life of Famous Whores, Roman Manners and Customs, The Roman Year, Roman Festivals, Roman Dress, Greek Games, Office of State, Cicero's Republic, The Physical Defects of Mankind, Methods of Reckoning Time, An Essay on Nature, Greek Objurgations.
Objurgations. Swear words.
Oh, Greek Objurgations. Grammatical Problems, Critical Signs Used in Books. So, exclamation marks, interrobangs, etc. No? Critical Signs as in from the gods?
No, that...
Emojis?
I don't actually know what that means. Well, they didn't have punctuation, so it can't be that.
Oh, of course, yeah. Emojis then. All right, emojis. Smiley faces. We've lost all of that. We refer to him as a historian, but really he's a man of all seasons who was writing about everything in there.
Well, I'd refer to him as a biographer.
But not even that. You know, he's talking about Roman dress, Greek games.
Some of this was written in Greek, yeah. We know. So he's multi-talented. It's very clear that he's doing all kinds of different things. For example, the Cicero's Republic is on Cicero's Republic. So presumably that's a commentary on a philosophical work. So he's dealing with philosophy and analysing it and thinking about it, which is a very long way from what he does in the imperial biographies. A lot of the others are biographies. So he writes about famous poets. He writes about the famous whores, as Robert Graves has it, often translated as courtesans.
Oh, okay.
and on institutions like the Greek Games, in other words, things like the Olympics and the calendar of the Romans.
Yeah.
Even getting into scientific areas like the weather or the names of the seas.
Yeah.
So climate and geography as well. So he is a polymath. He's what we'd call a polymath. We do have bits of the others, of some of the others, but mostly his other biographies.
The rhetorician. So we've got bits and pieces of a few of them, but they aren't more than really paragraphs, really.
No,
are they?
And they're not Suetonius mostly. What they are is later authors who've written a short biography of famous men or famous poets and are known to have used Suetonius.
Oh,
so
right.
They're kind of boiled down versions. They're still very important to us, otherwise we'd know nothing about playwright Terence and other authors as well. Cicero, Pliny, Sallust, Terence.
So Horace, beggars can't Lucan. Be choosers kind of thing.
Yeah. Especially for Terence, who's very early. He's a mid-Republican author. We really don't have much chance of knowing anything outside of what remains of his texts if we didn't have this somewhat diluted and passed through somebody else's mouth version of the biography. These were biographies he probably wrote before the 12 Caesars. We don't know for sure. For example, The Life of Virgil, which is by a 4th century author, probably comes originally from Suetonius. And by the 4th century, it's doubtful that authors would have known that much about authors like Virgil.
Mm.
Unless they'd had Suetonius
to
call
refer
upon.
To, yeah.
So, you know, it's good that he did it. But we really don't have anything substantial except for the 12 Caesars. We're very lucky to have all of that with the absence of the very beginning of Julius Caesar's life.
So we're missing the first few chapters of that text, aren't we?
Yeah.
That's annoying.
It is annoying, but I think in a way it's better for that to be missing than, I don't know, the bit on... At least we've got the life of Caligula, which, of course, his whole reign is entirely missing from Tacitus.
Yes.
We've lost that bit.
Okay.
So we're glad of that. The unfortunate thing about missing the beginning of Julius Caesar's life is that the other biographer who wrote a life, Plutarch, the beginning of that is also missing. It's like somebody did something bad happen early in Julius Caesar's life that someone slashed and burnt it out of the manuscript?
That's interesting. Yeah. I'm sure it's in a library monastery somewhere.
I hope so.
So let's look at the 12 Caesars and talk about the nature of it, the style that it's written, the order that it goes in. Chronological order, of course.
Well, to a certain extent, it's chronological.
Yeah.
But then it sort of becomes thematic as well. So he'll start out typically each life by saying the ancestors of this man, usually of this emperor, came from a certain place. This is what we know of his grandfather or his great-grandfather. And he might have anecdotes about other family members that go back about that far.
I like that we do that in the podcasts as well. Keep
well,
going.
We are the modern Suetonius, let's face it. Probably with all the good and bad things that encompasses. But it's not, strictly speaking, chronological, because at some point, about halfway through, he often decides to start talking about, he often put on games. So he'll say something like that, and then he'll describe the kind of spectacles that the emperor put on. Or he'll say he was famous for having affairs and talk about the affairs. And obviously those might cross a huge time span in the person's life. And he's very keen on character, which I think is one of the things that makes Suetonius so fascinating to us. So sometimes along the way, usually towards the end, he'll talk about the positives and negatives about this person's moral character. And, you know, some people get a lot more than others. In the life of Caligula, for example, halfway through, he says, so much for the emperor, now for the monster. And the rest of it is all just negatives, negative acts he did and descriptions of the hideousness of his character, you know, thinking he's a god, committing incest, all of this.
Mm.
So it's as much along topical lines as it is chronological. It has something to teach my students about essay writing, actually. Often they will go with the chronological narrative, but actually the thematic or topical paragraph gives us a lot more analysis about the person. It tells us about their tendencies, their achievements, their activities, and, as I say, character.
Yeah.
Most of all. So in some ways, and this is one of the reasons people have sometimes in the past reacted negatively to Suetonius as a source, in some ways it's quite anecdotal. So it'll tell you about people shouting out in the audience when the emperor stood up in a public place, rather than certainly what historians wanted in the past, which was that chronological narrative history, which, you know, you get more off with Tacitus. But it's a different genre. That's what Tacitus claims to be doing. It's not what Suetonius claims to be doing.
Yeah, I always found Suetonius a lot more readable, a very different audience to Tacitus. It's a lot less formal.
It is. I think Tacitus is fantastic to read, but Tacitus is not the author you would give to beginners of Latin, right? Or even after they've been doing it for, say, a year. Tacitus is quite hard, whereas Suetonius was considered quite easy, that you could use it for teaching Latin.
Mm.
I guess because it's more episodic, if you like, you can give someone a paragraph of Suetonius and it makes sense on its own. Whereas history, traditional history is part of a much larger narrative. So Suetonius is entertaining. I do remember the very first lecture I ever had as an undergrad on Suetonius. It was an ancient historian came into the room and said, the first thing you need to remember about Suetonius is that he was a constitutional liar and the equivalent of our tabloid press. And, you know...
Not a fan.
He really loved reading Suetonius, but he didn't want us to believe it word for word.
Yeah.
That is still quite an extreme view. There's a lot of useful material in Suetonius. And as we've said, he had access to those records, which means whatever he does with it, maybe he does sensationalize some of it, he's the person who is able to get that information from a real source, not just from what people are saying on the street.
Mm.
In terms of what he does within each life, as I say, there's a certain amount of chronology, then thematic, but he does tend to end them in the same way, which is, as makes sense, with the emperor's death. And then, it might not be as obvious to you, but quite useful anyway, he gives about a paragraph which is a description, a physical description of the person. Often quite critical, talks about how Julius Caesar was bald and about how Nero tended to be overweight and was a bit sensitive about it. Actually, Caesar was sensitive about the baldness too. So he is very interested in how the person appeared, what they looked like.
It's interesting that he ends the chapter with that.
Yeah, that he basically ends their life with that.
Yeah.
And he will talk a little bit about the aftermath as well. So famously in Nero's life, the aftermath is that some people didn't believe he was dead and there were fake Neros turning up all over the place. That comes from Suetonius. So he gives us a little bit about what happened afterwards. I guess we would say how the person was remembered in the immediate aftermath. For all you might think that Suetonius is going for the sensational, and of course it's quite easy for him to do that, with regard to emperors like Caligula and Nero, he does nevertheless try to find positives. You get the feeling that he doesn't want it all to be, this is a hideous monster, and I'm just going to tell you negative story after negative story. So even with someone like Nero, he does tell us that Nero put money into rebuilding Rome after it burnt down in 64, and that he built a city that was much safer and much better planned. And of course, the life of Nero is overwhelmingly negative about how he was deviant sexually and he went on stage, which was something that nobody of high birth should ever do. But he can still find positives to say about Nero. It's not a complete blackening of his character. He hasn't decided Nero was horrible, therefore I will only give you the negatives.
Yeah.
So there is some attempt at balance in these biographies.
So it's a shame that nobody decided to take up the torch after Suetonius and give us the emperors after, give us Nerva and Trajan and Hadrian, etc.
Well, there was somebody who did, but we've lost them.
Oh, okay.
So the immediate, I guess you'd say, successor of Suetonius is somebody called Marius Maximus, who did write imperial biographies that went from Trajan all the way up to Commodus, which is the end of the second century.
Yeah.
But they've all gone. So we do then have biographies that are probably from the fourth century by a variety of authors, which start with Hadrian, who's three emperors after Domitian, three emperors after Suetonius stops. The Historia Augusta, as it's called, or the writers of the Augustan history, are what we take up with Hadrian, but it leaves us with a bit of a gap. And really, if I were honest, I feel like we've just got a gap after Suetonius, because the Historia Augusta just doesn't seem as thorough, and it often doesn't seem as balanced as Suetonius.
Yeah.
So as we see with Hadrian, for example, the first biography from the Historia Augusta, it's really antagonistic towards him. Clearly, whoever wrote it hated Hadrian and only wants to feed us negatives about how lousy he is and, you know, to undermine his character in every single way possible, which really does make you appreciate Suetonius.
Yeah, I guess even he found something good to say about the bad emperors, even if there wasn't much good to say.
Yeah. In the end, though, with Suetonius, everybody gets compared to Augustus.
That's Dr. Rhiannon Evans, lecturer in Ancient Mediterranean Studies at La Trobe University. And you've been listening to Emperors of Rome. If you like this podcast, you can subscribe to it on iTunes. Please leave a review there and tell your friends about it. And now, a gratuitous notice about the Kickstarter campaign for my other podcast, When in Rome. If you like to listen to that podcast and learn about the sites and buildings of the ancient Roman Empire, then please consider giving it some support and help it out with funding. Go to kickstarter.com and search for When in Rome. You'll also find links in this podcast description and also on Facebook and Twitter. Where's Facebook, I hear you say? Well, go to Facebook and look for Emperors of Rome. Give it a like and have a discussion about how great or how unreliable or just how fun to read Suetonius is. You can also follow both myself and Rhiannon on Twitter. Rhiannon is at Dr. Rhiannon Evans and I'm at Nightlight Guy. In the next episode of Emperors of Rome, episode L, 50, and I never thought that we'd get there. But until that episode, I'm Matt Smith. You have been fantastic, and thanks for listening.